Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Good to see you once again, and good to continue this discussion of the differences between a will or trust
right.
and a side-by-side comparison. Those are the two main instruments you use in your practice in helping people with their estate plan. We have been going through a number of different comparisons. We kind of left off on the I don't want to pay any taxes question,
right.
and you wanted to kind of summarize that again.
Yeah, so just as we start today's show, I wanted to go back. What's the difference between a will and a trust? For simplicity, when I talk about a will, I mean a very rudimentary document, and what it's designed to do is tell us who gets whatever we have left in this life when we've passed away. Who gets it? So in other words, who are our beneficiaries? And also, it will tell us who is going to close our estate, also known as a personal representative in Washington state. And then really, a basic will is instruction to the court. In other words, if you don't need to intervene court, then we prefer that you stay out of our business. Mm-hmm. So that's really what a will does. Now, there are some wills that an attorney use that they stick a trust in. It's called a testamentary trust. In other words, the trust comes out of the testamentary object, the will. And so I don't use those in my practice. I believe that it's an antiquated tool and that it was useful at one point, but in most instances, it does not accomplish what we are trying to do. So for my purposes and for the purposes of our discussion, a will is more of a simple document that says, these are the individuals who get my assets when I pass away. Now, a trust, on the other hand, think of it as a holding container. The holding container are all the instructions, and then we put your assets in it. How do we do that? We retitle it. So instead of something being in the name of Paul Grant, it would be in the Grant Family Trust. And so when it's in that name, that means the instructions that we've created in the trust attach to that asset. So that's really important. We can't just have documents. We also need all of the assets to be placed inside the trust, or in other words, it's called retitling. We use the term integrated with the estate plan. As a matter of fact, all assets have to be integrated with the estate plan, whether you use a will, whether you use a testamentary trust, or whether you use a trust, a revocable living trust. Every asset must be integrated into that plan. So it's actually one of the biggest dangers in estate planning, which is we get the document, we walk away from the attorney, we think we're done. In most instances, we are not done. Now, of course, hopefully you connected with a really good attorney who already knows that and will guide you through that process. But if you just got documents and you think that you've won a victory, chances are you may not have a complete estate plan. So when we talk about the difference between a will and a trust for today's discussion, that's where we're starting. A basic rudimentary will versus a revocable living trust. And so with that, you mentioned, well, how about taxes? Well, if we use an instrument, a will, that means that we're writing a check to somebody. And really, because we're simply transferring money to whomever is going to receive it, there are no tax considerations whatsoever. If they are to pay an estate tax, then the estate tax has to be paid. If we have to pay income taxes from an IRA, then they have to be paid. So in other words, what we're doing is a will is simply moving money to the appropriate individuals without consideration of whether or not that beneficiary is trained financially, whether or not that beneficiary has any special needs, whether that beneficiary is going through a difficult time in life, whether that beneficiary earns a lot of income. And so therefore, we just may be adding a tax burden to them. However, a trust has opportunities to mitigate estate taxes and income tax and estate tax generationally. So notice how I phrase that. It has the opportunity. Mm-hmm. So in other words, you can have a trust that is a templated trust and it may only keep you out of probate. Actually, if you don't integrate your assets well, it may not even do that. So there are different types of trusts. And unfortunately, as most people know, you get what you pay for. So if you only paid $1,000, $2,000 for your trust, it probably is not going to accomplish what you really think and what you may actually hope it's going to accomplish. Mm-hmm. So a trust has the possibility to assist in tax mitigation, both during your passing away, so for your estate, and for the lifetime of your beneficiaries. As a matter of fact, not only is it a misnomer that trusts are taxed higher, the opposite may be true when a trust is well designed, which is it could actually be a tax advantage, not just for estate tax, not just for generation skipping taxes, but for income taxes. Trusts may provide a safe harbor and a tax advantage for beneficiaries. So when we use a more basic tool like a will, we may be sacrificing any tax advantages that a trust may or may not provide. So again, I want to be really careful because not all trusts are created equal. Mm-hmm. And it's not just for the rich and famous that for individuals who should be using a trust instrument. It's just an instrument. And every estate planner has these two instruments at their disposal, a will or a revocable living trust. And many estate planners may use an idea that says, you know, probate is not that difficult in Washington, so let's just use a will. Well, that is being a little bit narrowly focused on why someone would use a trust. Yes, an advantage could be that we don't have to go through the probate process, but that's not the only reason that we use a revocable living trust. As a matter of fact, tax mitigation, protecting inheritances for generations. We've talked about what happens if we have a special needs a child. We have to utilize a what's called a discretionary trust one way or another. So it's either we can stick it into a will or we need to utilize a revocable living trust if we have special needs. Or if we have minor children, it's very common to stick that in. So we've talked about that in past podcasts already, which you can find at legacyandfaith.com. So the previous couple shows have discussed those things. But for tax issues, a will has no tax advantage whatsoever. A trust can potentially assist in tax mitigation. Not that it will, but that it has the opportunity when it's created properly. And so if you have any of these types of questions about whether or not your current estate plan is matching up with your goals of not paying the government, with not paying undue taxes, then get over to our website, connect with us, and we'd be glad to look at what you have compared to what we typically do and whether or not those tax advantages and that tax mitigation goal is actually being met by a client. Hmm.
Okay, well, that sounds like a trust is a better tool then for possibly avoiding some taxes.
Yeah, for tax issues, it's really the only thing that can work because otherwise we're just writing a check to a beneficiary and the taxes are going to be what the taxes are when we use a will.
Okay. Well, moving on to some of these other side-by-side comparison questions. What if someone else controls my money when I am disabled? People think of trusts and wills only when you die, but they also can have some power when you're still alive, but maybe disabled.
Absolutely. And that's this is really where we see a mass disparity between a will and a trust. So number one, a will is a testamentary object. So in other words, when you die, it turns on. Therefore, it can do nothing to accommodate when you are alive. So therefore, number one, a will has no power and effect to assist you during your lifetime should you need assistance. Rather, a trust, a revocable living trust. So the revocable means you're in full power and control. You can change what you put into it. You can change the terms. In my process, we have a relationship. And so if I see something that changes in the law or in taxes, you can authorize me to go back in and make an adjustment. Why? Because it's revocable. You hold all power and control. But it's also a living document, which means that it can accommodate issues for when you are alive. In other words, instructions for what happens when you need assistance. So how a trust operates is that when you are alive and well, so in other words, you can manage your own money. You don't need anyone else to assist you. That means that you are the trustee. So you create the document, you're the trust maker, and you are going to manage what is inside your own trust. In other words, you are the current trustee. Now, if you experience a health incident and you need someone else to stand beside you and assist you, whether it's writing checks, whether it's having access to your bank account, or if it's a mental incapacitation and we actually need to step in to protect you from making wrong financial choices, then we need someone else to come in and take over the trust. That is called a successor trustee, the person who succeeds you in managing everything that is in your trust. Now, remember, in order to make the trust work properly, we need to have all of your assets integrated into it. So the assumption is that there's only two assets that are not in your trust. Number one is your IRA, because you cannot put an IRA into a trust. That would end or be an ending event for the tax-deferred status of an IRA, and therefore we'd have to pay all of your taxes immediately. That's a bad day. So therefore, an IRA must stay in your personal name. We will get to that in just a second. Otherwise, and then a vehicle. And that's just because Washington State has a non-probate transfer method of being able to transfer your vehicle. So
what about like if you have a bunch of classic cars, like a vehicle collection?
Yeah, even still. Now, okay. If you have a desire that says this vehicle is to go to that person, this vehicle is to go over here, or if there's going to be some very specific instructions concerning those vehicles, well, we would want to address that in the trust.
Okay.
But if it's one of those things where it follows the alignment of what you want to have happen, then we just put it, then we wouldn't do something specific. But there is an exception to your vehicle not being in trust, which is if you have no children and if you have no heirs, then we would want to actually put your vehicles into the trust. So so the non-probate transfer method works if you have children. It does not work if you don't have children. So therefore, if you're single and you've never had children, even if you're married and don't have children, then that is a time when we would actually want to put your car into the trust as well. So other than that, everything has to go into your trust. Now, we're talking about what happens should a successor trustee need to manage your money, and what does a trust benefit you versus utilizing a will and a financial power of attorney. So because we're up against a break here, we're going to come back after break and we'll discuss some more of what the power of a trust can do, specifically if you encounter a health issue and someone else needs to manage your money for you.
Okay, Legacy and Faith Show this week, a side-by-side comparison of the will versus the trust, which is better for certain circumstances. We'll discuss this further in a moment. If people want help, they're intrigued, how do they get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. We have upcoming workshops, educational sessions, ways to get in contact with us, and as already mentioned, we have past podcasts lined up there. So head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Grant, the host of the Legacy and Faith Show on KCIS, and I am inviting you to come out to a workshop about estate planning that I'm going to be hosting in person at Venture Church in Mill Creek. You can head over to my website, legacyandfaith.com, and find out more information. But it is going to be on Wednesday, September 1st at 7 p.m., again, at Venture Church. So head over, legacyandfaith.com, sign up for our educational workshop, meet me in person, and we're going to have an awesome time. Head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
Many families realize that with the passing of each generation, their family legacy is disappearing and they're feeling regret. To alleviate this heartache, Memories Worth Telling writes their family story and creates a beautiful heirloom book to preserve their unique history. Go to memorieswworthtelling.com to schedule your initial consultation and learn how they can capture your legacy. Once again, that's memorieswworthtelling.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant this week, looking at a side-by-side comparison of the will or the trust, which is better for certain circumstances, looking at the circumstance as to when maybe you become disabled, maybe you have a stroke or Alzheimer's starts to happen in your life, which of these vehicles works best for you.
Right. And so because it's a revocable living trust, the living component means we can give instructions to the successor trustee on what to do with your finances if indeed you are not able to manage them anymore. So what I say is that a revocable living trust will actually give you more power than what you have now, because without a revocable living trust, and by the way, again, this is, I have to be careful because not every trust is created equal. As a matter of fact, most trusts that I have ever reviewed do not give enough instruction at this point, which is, if I should have a disability, these are the things that I want to have happen. These are my values with finances. This is how I want my successor trustee to manage my money. That is missing in almost every single trust I review. So, so just because you have a trust, it may not meet really what we're talking about. It may not rise to the level of this discussion. So again, I want to be careful that if I talk about a trust, they are not all created equally. So in a well-designed trust, then there should be greater instructions. And when there are greater instructions to your successor trustee, what to do? So here's an example. If you had a health incident, and it was safe for you to be at home and medically possible for you to be at home, would you prefer to be cared for at your home instead of a different facility? So most individuals that I talk to would, as a matter of fact, very quickly say, yes, I want that. Well, what if we never tell your successor trustee those instructions? What if it's not in your financial power of attorney? Then we have missing information and we have an absence of guidance to those who are caring for you. And so a trust should do a better job. Unfortunately, it oftentimes does not do a better job, but it should do a better job at preparing your successor trustee for success. In other words, it should give them guidance on how to use your money. What are your values with using your money? And how do you want to be cared for? Now, that's important for two reasons. Number one, it gives your successor trustee, like I said, an opportunity for success. In other words, we're giving them as much instruction as possible. I don't like a trust that looks like an IKEA instruction. Little stick figures with you're guessing at what it means. I want to lay out very specific instructions should you not lose your voice. So again, you don't have to lose your voice, but we have to do a good job today of planning that issue. And then number two, it gives your beneficiaries a greater sense of security that the money that is in under someone else's management, it gives your beneficiaries a greater sense of security that is being used properly. And if it's not, then it gives your beneficiaries a greater sting to go after that person. Mm. So it protects your estate as a whole and your overall objective of what you want to have happen with your estate when someone else is managing your finances on your behalf. So a revocable living trust, the living component is so critical. It is often missing. As a matter of fact, almost always missing. There's only been one or two trusts in my 12-year career that I've ever looked at that have instructions like that. And so it's almost always missing. Mm. We need to do a better job in my industry of addressing what happens should I lose control, because my goal is to keep you in control even when you lose control.
Mm. Yeah, you alluded to the power of attorney is important here. How is it different in a will versus a trust?
Yeah, so a power of attorney is a secondary document, which you need in a will package, and we also need in a trust package. So it doesn't matter which testamentary object you use. You need a financial power of attorney. The financial power of attorney operates differently depending on which tool we've used for your ultimate estate plan. When it's used in a will, because that turns on when you have died, your financial power of attorney is the sole document that we will lean upon should you need assistance during your lifetime. In other words, that document, everything I just told you about giving direction to someone, that becomes the only instrument available for direction should you need assistance. And unfortunately, again, if you're not getting a really strong estate plan, your financial power of attorney is probably likewise lagging. In other words, there's not specific instructions within the financial power of attorney that gives direction to your agent. Here it's called your financial power of attorney. We refer to them as your agent, and so, or your attorney in fact. And so here, that document should be doing the same thing that your trust is doing, which is giving clear, specific instructions on how to use my money, but it's never done. Mm. I don't know if I've ever seen a financial power of attorney give greater instructions when to an agent. And so therefore, really what the financial power of attorney is doing is it's saying, you have access to my financial accounts. Do whatever you think is in my best interest. Now, if we stop and think about the simplicity of that statement, I'm giving you full and absolute access. You do what you think is in my best interest. Number one, have you ever had a conversation with your agent about what is in your best interest, about what you mean by that statement? Mm. And so, unfortunately, when we use a will and a financial power of attorney, most of them are templated documents, and therefore they don't include better instructions. In a trust environment, the financial power of attorney is meant for a different purpose. Because your assets are in the trust, there's one asset that the financial power of attorney does manage, which is your IRA. Because remember, I told you earlier in this show, you can't put your IRA in a trust. So it does manage that asset. Otherwise, the financial power of attorney is really intended for bills and debts, your credit cards. Can we cancel a credit card? Can we cancel a utility? Have you ever called Comcast when your name is not on the account and tried to make an adjustment?
Hmm.
Yeah, it's impossible. And so, and how Comcast became just this ridiculous company to deal with, I have no idea. But man, they won't talk to you at all. And so you need a financial power of attorney because that is going to be in your name. Hmm. If you had to move, then we have to cancel garbage and do other things. So that's what a financial power of attorney is set out to do in a trust environment versus in a will environment. In the will environment, it does that same thing. Plus, it gives full access to your accounts, but with no instructions. And for me, I'm not so sure how I've done my job well if I'm not protecting my clients by giving their voice to the circumstance. And that is what is missing in estate planning in general. Hmm. And so we really need to have this conversation. This is why everyone needs an estate plan, by the way. Mm-hmm. You may not need a trust. You may need a will. But then we have to be able to take that financial power of attorney and rearrange it so that it communicates your desires, that it communicates what your financial goals are. So even in a more rudimentary document as a will package, we need to have an expression of guidance to those who would have management and have authority over your finances. In my opinion, power of attorneys are a scary document. And that's coming from an estate planner. Hmm. So that is a statement that people should really stop and consider. Is my estate plan really set up to protect me during my lifetime? Because if it's not, then we need to sit down and have a different conversation and really pull out the what-ifs scenario and how am I going to be protected and my finances utilized in my best interest so that they're preserved for the next generation, if indeed that is your passion. So let's have the conversation. Head over to legacyandfaith.com. There's opportunities to communicate with us, to connect with us. There's upcoming educational opportunities where we cover these things in more depth. And so again, head over to legacyandfaith.com. A lot more information. Would love to connect with you. Would love to get to know you.
Legacyandfaith.com. Always great stuff on the Legacy and Faith Show with estate and tax planning attorney Paul Grant here on KCIS.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.